Thank you, Jacopo, for the introduction and for the invitation. We are Giulio, me and Giulio are very excited and pleased to be here with you and to have the opportunity to discuss about our latest work, as you were saying. So today I will talk about energy and speed bound in general probabilistic theory. This presentation is based on our work that you can already find in the archive at this address. And in particular, what we do is we propose a derivation of the notion of energy, starting from informational theoretic assumptions. After having introduced this after having defined energy, we go further and we try to explore these notions by deriving some bounds on the evolution speed of reverse on the evolution speed of reversible dynamics. So, I mean, of course, energy, everyone knows that how energy is a central concept in physics. And not only that, it's also a key tool, no? Because from energy, we can derive the law of motion and we can understand better the dynamics. And despite its many forms or the many shapes that energy takes, there is always one constant. And this is the fact that energy is strictly connected and related to the dynamics, to the movement. And I mean, this relation is made manifest, for example, in quantum theory, no? Where energy is usually taken to be the expectation value of the Hamiltonian, of this observable. Observable that has a corresponding generator that is the generator of reversible evolution. So in some way here, the energy and the dynamics are actually the same thing. They are very intimately connected. And this dual role of the Hamiltonian as an observable and as the generator is not an accident. Actually, from this duality, from the duality between the algebra of observable and the algebra of generators, we can derive the whole algebraic structure of quantum theory. However, despite its very important role, energy still struggle to find a characterization in informational terms. I mean, this is in part is given by the fact that the operational framework by itself focuses more on statistical predictions rather than on the dynamics itself. And so it's easier not to consider to ignore there is no need actually to talk about energy and the dynamics and to bring them into the picture. In the literature, I'm aware of just a few examples when there is actually but in an operational information theoretic framework, people talk about energy and Hamiltonian. And even in these few cases, what is usually done is that it is assumed some kind of relation of some kind of form of this concept. I never found a derivation of energy starting from informational principle. And actually, and this is actually what motivated me and Giulio in trying to reconstruct quantum dynamic starting from informational principle. So I mean, we started from a very simple idea that the dynamical evolution happens when there is a difference in the information content between a system and its environment. Something that we decide to call information non-equilibrium. So as an analogy, we can think, for example, of a field. And it is composed of identical bosons, so of identical particles of identical systems that are all prepared in the same state. And you can think of a system that cross these fields, and during its path, it starts interacting by collision with all the bosons that compose the field. And these interactions are non-trivial if and only if the state that cross the system that cross the field is in a different state respect of the state of the particle that are composing the field. So, I mean, this is a nice idea, no? Is a nice picture that I mean can find, for example, some inspiration from example of a thermal bath. Now we have an object, it goes to a thermal bath. If it is of the same temperature, it doesn't change its state. Otherwise, it gets cooler or it gets hotter. But more in general, where we have some intuition about some possible physical principle. Quantum theory gives us the opportunity to test it. So what we did is exactly this. So we decided to see how this principle, this information on equilibrium, behaves in quantum theory. And to do this, we use the tool given by collision models. So collision models are very popular in quantum theory. They are usually used mostly to understand the dynamic of open quantum system. And a collision model is composed by the repetition of a basic unit that we have depicted here. So what we have here is a target system that is the one denoted by the upper wire, and an ancillary system that is the one in the lowest wire that is in some state sigma. And they go through a unitary interaction that we call here Hess for a short time, in general, short time tau. And after the reversible interaction has taken place, the ancillary system is traced out. So a collision model is just the sequential repetition of this unit block on the same target system. Now, from quantum theory, we know that if we consider the partial swap as the unitary interaction, then this collision model, this sequence of blocks, what it gives us is the approximation of the unitary evolution that has as generator, you see here the same sigma, that is the density matrix of the ancillary, describing the state of the ancillary system. And I mean, already this is quite nice. Now it's telling us that, okay, from collision model, we actually have something that is close to be a unitary evolution. So there are two things that are still missing for our intuition to be really useful. So the first one is that we don't want this collision model to approximate a unitary evolution. We would like to be exactly a unitary evolution. And secondly, if this principle really is able to describe the dynamics, then we through collision model we should be able to simulate all possible quantum dynamics. So, for what concerns the first problem, actually, in the continuous time limit, we exactly get the unitary evolution that has as generator the density matrix describing the state sigma. And maybe here it's important to remark that this is not in contradiction with the non-programming theorem that says that no quantum universal programming can exist, because in the continuous time limit, what we are having is that we are considering an infinite number of ancillary system sigma. So we are going with an ancilla of infinite dimension. And this is allowed from the non-programming theorem. So in the continuous time limit, we have exactly a unitary evolution. And what we were also able to find to prove is that not only that, but we can generate through the collision model with the partial swap as the interaction, we can generate all quantum reversible evolution. So here is maybe a little bit surprising because the ancillary system is a density matrix, so is a positive semi-definite. So how is it possible that from that we can get all the reversible evolution? The trick is that the maximal mixed state is the one generating the trivial dynamics. So you can think is just a phase. So we can think density matrix that are a combination of the maximally mixed state minus something else. And from this, we can actually get all possible reversible quantum evolution. As a final remark, also, it doesn't have to surprise that the limit of non-reversible evolution is actually a reversible evolution. And the reason is that in the limit, the only terms that survives are the first order terms that are reversible. So even if we have here before in the sequence of channel, if you have the trace and every single unit block is a non-reversible transformation, the limit of a sequence of them is actually reversible. Okay, so the collision model works, and what we do now is that we try to bring the collision model to build a generalized version of the collision model and see what we can derive from it. So now we enter in the main part of the talk. I will very briefly introduce the framework of general probabilistic theories, GPT. From the framework, we will then be able to build a collision model in an operational framework. And then we will state what are the main assumptions of our work. from which we will be able to derive the notion of energy. How do we do it? We do it by deriving an observable generator duality. So this composes in two steps. The first one is building a state generator duality that you might have already gotten intuition because through the collision model, no, there is a sort of relation between the state, the ancillary state, and the generator. And then we'll introduce the notion of observable in GPT, and we'll connect the observable with the generator. So once we have done this, we will finally derive an operational version of the speed bound. Okay, so let's start. So about GPT, so the GPT are an operational framework. That means that an operational framework is a mathematical tool that helps us in describing what an hypothetical experimental physicist could do in his own laboratory. So we can think, for example, that of course we want our framework to take into account the ability of our experimental physicist to prepare some system in some state rho I. We can think, for example, I don't know, like the simplest example is the two-level quantum system, like for example the qubit, and we can think, for example, of preparing the polarization of light. It can be vertically or horizontally polarized. It can be 45 minus 45 degrees, and so we want to be able to have something that describes this. Then, of course, our experimental physicist in his lab could do some operation on this state and changing it to another state. Could, for example, apply him a beam splitter, or it could use a filter on the polarization. So, and this will be described by transformations, by these the change the state of the system after its application. And finally, and probably most importantly, what we want able to describe in our framework is the measurement. So we want to be able to have an object that with which our experimental physicist can measure the system that we have prepared and then we have transformed. So this, of course, is just you can have much more general scenarios. This is just a very brief introduction, but still, I think it gets to the point of what does it mean to have an operational framework. And the operational framework by itself is not really enough, because even if you have all the objects to describe what are the possibilities of a physicist in his laboratory, we're still missing something that is able to give us predictions, and this is given by probability. So the GPT combined the operational frameworks with probability, and for every closed circuit like the one here in the slide, it corresponds to a probability. That will be the probability of having outcome L, given that the transformation CJ has been applied to the state prepared in rho I. And as probability, of course, they need to satisfy some normalization constraint. So if we take the simple example of, for example, a state a preparation in a state rho that is followed by a measurement, we get the intuition that that states could actually be represented by vectors of probabilities. And in principle, to have a very accurate description, the state rho should include all the possible answer to all the possible questions that the experimental physicist could possibly implement in his laboratory. So it should contain the probability for every possible outcome of every possible measurement that are allowed in the theory. Of course, not all outcomes are necessarily independent to one another. So in the end, usually a finite number of them is enough to describe the state. In the case of the polarization of the light, actually four numbers are enough. So the probability of having polarization along three axes that are along three different axes, plus, for example, the normalization constraint. So okay, now that we have more or less a picture of what are the objects, let's see how they can be mathematically characterized. So usually a system is a finite dimensional real vector space. A state rho is an element of a convex set of this vector space. We define a measurement as a collection of linear functional EJ, such that for every state row, they are normalized to one. That means that when we apply this measurement to row and we sum over all possible outcomes, the probability will be one. And we call an effect one of the outcome of the measurement. So given a measurement EJ, each one of the EJ is an effect that is nothing else than a linear function over the state space with value in 0 and 1. And finally, we define transformation as linear map between state spaces. What comes with the framework is also the fact that the state of effect, the spaces of states, effect, and transformations are all closed and convex. And also the group of reversible transformation is closed. Here, the motivation is that if we can practically go arbitrarily close to a preparation or to a transformation, then this means that in the laboratory, we should in principle be able also to prepare that state to do the transformation or to apply that measurement. And this is the basic framework. And just with these basic notions, we can go a little bit farther in the classification and the characterization of the reversible dynamics. So the reversible transformation, they correspond to a subgroup of the orthogonal matrices. This is because they are like we are in finite dimension, and they have a matrix group, and so they have a representation as a subgroup in general of the orthogonal group. If now we require a continuous dynamic, then we have to exclude all the matrices that have determinant minus one. So in the case of a continuous dynamic, the reversible transformation are a subgroup of the special orthogonal group. And in this case, the corresponding Lie algebra of this Lie group is the algebra of skew symmetric matrices, or a subalgebra thereof in case we have a subgroup of SON. And this is very, very similar, not the same, very is analogous to the case of quantum theory, where we have the group of unitary matrices and the algebra of skew Hermitian matrices. And with these notions, we can already build a version of the collision model, an operational version of the collision model. So we take the same architecture that is already present in the quantum collision model. So what we have again is a target system that is this upper wire, and we have an ancillary system prepared in some state row that now is just a vector, a real vector. And we have a unitary interaction that now is pictured by orthogonal matrix, where G tot is the generator, so it's a skew Hermitian matrix. And after the reversible interaction has taken place, we discard the ancillary system. That means, in operational language, to apply what is called a deterministic effect. It is completely analogous to the trace in quantum theory. And then we are left with the target system after the evolution. So again, what we were able to prove is that, as in the quantum scenario, if we consider the limit of an infinite application of this interaction for an infinitesimal time, what we get is a reversible evolution. So what we get is a special orthogonal matrix, where we were able to give a very nice characterization of the generator of this evolution that you can find here in the red box, where again, U is the deterministic effect. And here we use the tensor product symbol to denote just the parallel composition. Doesn't need necessarily to be the tensor product itself. So just as a remark, this was up to now, we have not required anything else than just what the basic framework of general probabilistic theory offers to us. Now, to go further and to actually define the notion of energy, we need to ask for some other assumptions. So the first assumption is what we introduced in the beginning, that mathematically formalized states that every state generates the trivial dynamics on itself. That means that if we consider the collision model and we take the generator that drives the reversible interaction of the collision model, When the target system and the ancillary system are in the same state, then there is no interaction. What we have is just the target system remains unchanged. Then what we also assumed is a strong symmetry. So strong symmetry appeared for the first time in a reconstruction of quantum theory, in the reconstruction of quantum theory by Barnum, Mueller, and Dudek. And says that for every two sets of perfectly distinguishable pure states that have the same cardinality, there is a reversible transformation that connects them. And we ask for this reversible transformation to be achieved by a collision model. So we haven't said yet what does it mean to be perfectly distinguishable. What does it mean that given a set of state of pure states, they are perfectly distinguishable if they exist a measurement that is able to jointly discriminate between them? That means that for every state in the set, there exists for every state in the set, there exists an effect in the measurement such that that effect gives one only on that state and zero on all the other states. And so we name these assumptions information dynamical because they are informational assumptions that regards the dynamics, and this is actually all we require about the dynamics. And then we add the other two assumptions that are diagonalization and purity preservation, that they will do mostly the groundwork to prepare to give us actually tools to operate with. So diagonalization appeared in the same reconstruction by Barnum, Mueller, and Dudek of strong symmetry, and says that for every state rho, there is a set of perfectly distinguishable pure states such that rho can be decomposed as a convex sum of those states. And purity preservation says that the parallel or sequential composition of pure states, pure transformation, and pure effects is still a pure state, a pure transformation, or a pure effect. Here, pure transformation and pure effect are exactly the same meaning of pure state. They just mean that they are extremal points or of the convex set of states, transformation, and effects, respectively. Okay, so these are all the assumptions that we require, and from this, our first main result is that for every collision model, the correspondence between the ancillary the state of the ancillary system sigma and the generator is injective. So this means that if two states generate the same collisional dynamics, then they are the same state, and the maximally mixed state is the only state that generates the trivial dynamics. At this point, they say that if we consider the collisional dynamics, that is, this as one-to-one correspondence with the set of states of our theory. So the next step now is to connect the to extend this duality to also observable. But before doing this, we need to before this, we actually need to introduce the concept of observable in quantum theory. So there are usually various definitions of what is an observable in quantum theory, and all of them, of course, are usually considered to be linear combination of effects. So in particular, here we adopt the approach that was already presented in the framework of sharp theories with purification. That was developed initially by Giulio and Carlo Maria, and define observable as a linear combination of coexisting pure effects. So this means that the effects of an of which we define the observable, they can be in principle implemented in the same to a single measurement. So this definition is very well posed because it includes the definition of observable in quantum theory. And it has also many other nice properties. For example, it's very natural to introduce a functional calculus on the observable. For every real function f, the f of x will just be defined as the sum of the sum of the function applied to the various coefficients in the linear combinations times the effects. And also the expectation value is just obtained by applying this observable to the various states to every state for every state row. Okay, so now let's go back to our state generator correspondence. Now, from diagonalization, we have that every state sigma can be written as a convex sum of perfectly distinguishable pure state psi i. Now, from strong symmetry and diagonalization, Barnum, Mueller, and Dudek prove that every theory satisfying strong symmetry and diagonalization is also strongly self-dual. So, the strongest, I will not get into the definition of strongly self-dual, but let me just say that the strong self-duality implies that there is a one-to-one correspondence between pure states and normalized pure effect. That means that for every pure state, there is a unique normalized pure effect, such that that effect has probability one on that state. From this we can we it's, from this it's not difficult to prove that if the pure states are perfectly distinguishable, then the corresponding dual effects they actually form a measurement, so they are coexisting. And at this point is clear that we can define an energy observable H as simply a convex combination of the pure effects that corresponds to the state sigma. And with the same coefficients that appear in the decomposition of sigma. So in this way, we are able, for example, given H, to canonically associate H to sigma. We can always and one another. So there is a one-to-one correspondence. Still, even if this is able to capture the dynamics that is generated by the corresponding generator of sigma by G sigma. Still, this is missing an information. And it is the fact that given two dynamics that are generated by the same generator, still they're different if we multiply one of them for any real number, any parameter alpha that is different from one. So this parameter alpha is actually a description of the rate at which the trajectory of the state space are traveled. And this is actually a very is also part of the dynamics, so it's an information that we would like to describe through our observable. And what we decide to use is the maximum singular value of the maximum singular value of the generator G sigma. So in this way, by defining the observable H as the maximum singular value multiplied by the sum over I of the convex combination of the effects that are dual to the pure state decomposing the state rho, we obtain an energy observable that has the same that can univocally, canonically correspond to the generator of the dynamic. So at this point that we have built this generator observable duality. The role of energy is, of course, to be considered as the expectation value of this observable. And turns out that this has actually a lot of very nice property that shares with its quantum counterpart. So, for example, it's bounded from below. In particular, in our case, it's always positive for every state rho. Of course, because we have effects that act on a state, so they are positive by definition. And lambda max and pi are also positive by definition. We can think of every I to be corresponding to a certain energy level. And by the fact that the effects they all coexist in the same measurement, there is a practical way to measure the energy that is by implementing this ideal measurement that is composed of the effects e psi i. And crucially, another very nice result that we obtain is that energy is invariant under time evolution. So this means that the expectation value of the observable does not change accordingly to the change of the state during the evolution. So this actually derives from the informational equilibrium. That says that a state rho doesn't evolve if it is in the same state of the ancillary system that drives the collision model. So and from self-duality, because from self-duality we get that if the state is invariant, also its measurement will be invariant. And so the measurement, the energy observable is actually a measurement along sigma, and sigma is invariant due to informational equilibrium, and so the energy is invariant under time evolution. Even more than that, we were with some extra work, we can also show that the whole probability distribution of the ideal energy measurement is invariant. So this means that the probability of every effect E psi I on the state rho is invariant under time evolution. So now we're able to give a starting from our axiom to have a derivation of the duality between the observable and the generator, and to arrive to a proper definition of energy. As I was saying in the beginning of the talk, energy is not only a central concept, but it is also now a very important tool. And now we can use the energy to derive some other information about the dynamics. So we turn our attention toward quantum speed bounds. So quantum speed bounds, or speed limits, are usually lower bound on the time necessary for a system to evolve between two orthogonal states, accordingly to a given Hamiltonian H. So this means that we fix our dynamics, we fix our Hamiltonian H, and then the time needed for any state rho to go to its orthogonal is lower bounded by the quantum speed limit. That is a function that depends is a is it depends on the variance of the Hamiltonian, on the square root of the variance of the Hamiltonian delta H. So quantum speed bounds have very similar mathematical formulation to uncertainty relation. And indeed, this actually the first time it came out as an uncertainty relation, but is improper because time is not really an observable, and it cannot be, and is time is not an observable. And so is to be some different meaning. And for the it was firstly formulated by Mandelstam and Tam, this in the version of a speed limit, when time was to be considered as the internal time for the evolution of the system. And so by understanding this relation as the relation that express the minimum time necessary to evolve, then we can correctly formulating. So let's try to do the same thing in our framework. We start by defining what is the speed in what is the operational version of speed. So we just consider a dynamic d, and then for any state rho, we consider the speed of the state rho as the norm between the state after the evolution, the state at the beginning of the evolution, over the time difference t minus t zero. Then we have a first result that is, in the case of a reversible dynamics, for any state rho, the average speed is upper bounded by the instantaneous speed. Where for instantaneous speed, we just consider as an analogous way to the quantum case as the limit of the derivative of the average speed. And we can then by considering the dynamics generated by a collision model, we can further improve this bound, and we can arrive to the bound that is presented here in the red box that says that the square root of the instantaneous speed is upper bounded by 2 times the square of the instantaneous speed is upper bounded by 2 times the variance of the variance of the observable that is connected to the generator of the collision model. So from now it's just a matter of manipulation of the equation. And by introducing a matter of manipulation and equation. And what we get is actually a relation that is ex exactly the same functional form of the quantum speed limit. Specifically, in the case where we want to consider the evolution between an initial state to a final state that is orthogonal to the initial state, the distance in the numerator takes value 1. So we get rid of the dependence of the state. What we have is just that the time is upper bounded by some constant over the square root of the variance of the Hamiltonian. Okay, so this concludes the presentation. Just to remark, what are the main points that we developed during the presentation is that. We started from the motivation of characterizing the dynamics in informational terms. And to do this, we introduce an assumption that we named the informational equilibrium that says that a system evolves even only if the information of the target system is different from the information of the environment. And from this, we were able to, together with strong symmetry, generalization, and purity preservation, we were able to derive a generator observable duality in generalized probabilistic theory. And once we obtain this duality and we have a more clear interpretation of what is energy, we are also able to derive an operational version of the speed limit. As future works, what could actually be interesting is to compare toy theories with our informational dynamical assumptions. I believe this point to be quite challenging, and because from one side, in the operational in most of the operational theory that has been proposed, there is no clear idea of what is energy or what is the of there's not like a way to easy way to compare it with our collisional model. So to understand if the informational equilibrium assumptions holds or not. Another interesting direction could be to derive speed limits that are more tight and therefore like better and also maybe follow the very wide literature that there is in quantum theory about speed limit that they also involves different notion other than the variance. They involve like for example the expectation values and so forth and so on. And finally, the last point that maybe is the easiest of the three is to give up about strong symmetry. So the point is that for example, in the derivation of our main result about the generator state duality, strong symmetry is not actually necessary. What we only need, for example, is transitivity. It is a weaker version that says that every two pure state are connected by a reversible transformation that we would require, of course, this reversible transformation to be generated through the collision model. The other results, they mainly derive from we all use strong symmetry to derive self-duality together with diagonalization. So a possible approach to avoid strong symmetry could be use the framework of sharp theories with purifications that are operational probabilistic theories that follows four axioms that are causality, purification, sharpness, that means that it always exists for every state a normalized effect, and the purity preservation. So in this framework, it has already been proved to there is already it already implies, for example, diagonalization and self-duality, as well, of course, transitivity. And so it could be interesting the way to derive maybe the same result, but with different axioms. And so thank you very much for the attention, and you are more than welcome to ask me anything you about the talk.
Really good. Thank you, Lorenzo, for this presentation. It was really nice. If there are any questions from the public, I cannot see from the room, so you can talk in case.
I have a question.
Alex. Yes, Alex.
Actually, I have just a couple. The first question is, in the story based on these collision models, does every observable based on, you know, whatever measurement show up as a generator?
So you mean like going in the opposite direction? So we start with an observable and see if that observable corresponds to a generator.
Yes.
So for any observable that is described with because we define observable to be combination of linear coefficient, linear combination, right?
Right. So you can start with that.
Right. While for what concerning on the other end the observable that we defined as the energy observable, this is a convex combination of pure effects. So I'd say that if we change our initial definition to be as a convex combination of coexisting pure effects times a positive constant, then yes, for every one of them, it would correspond to.
Okay, great. Other question. If you could go back to the statement of strong symmetry that you used, I just
yes,
want to
yes, yeah.
So unless I'm reading this incorrectly, it looks like you're actually more than the usual strong symmetry. What?
Yes.
My attention was the phrase achievable by a collision model.
Yes, indeed. So the usual strong symmetry that does not talk about collision model. Here, what we are requiring is that the strong symmetry is given by a transformation of the collision model. Let me say two things. So the first one is what if we don't assume that is achievable by a collision model? Then what we end up is that correspondence between state and effect, between state and generator, would not necessarily be one to one, but would be modulo every reversible transformation that is not generated by the collision model and is invariant and then leaves the state invariant. So is a sort of like taking we have to take like equivalence classes of states and to obtain an injective map. What it goes away is surjectivity. So to have this one-to-one, injectivity stays there, but what it goes away is subjectivity. And so to have this one-to-one correspondence between states and transformation, we need to consider equivalence classes. That is not very nice. So this was the reason of taking here the notion of to add to the strong symmetry the fact that it needs to be achievable by a collision model. And from a physical perspective, how this could be motivated, for example, this is the case in quantum theory. We show in the beginning that in quantum theory, all the reversible evolution is generated by the collision model. So, by the collision model, yes.
Okay, thank you. Jacopo, am I allowed one further question?
Yeah, go on. there is just a question of Rob waiting, so maybe after this.
It's really, really short. One thing I noticed is that you don't seem to be needing to use local tomography anywhere.
We do not assume local tomography. Here I was saying before, as I was saying before, here the tensor, this is not really the tensor plot. It's just the same notation, but it's arbitrary parallel composition.
Yeah, cool. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Rob, you can go whenever you want.
Great, thanks. Hi, Lorenzo. This is Rob Spaggins.
I'm
just wondering about if you thought about the kind of scope of operational theories that satisfy your assumptions and that are different from quantum theory. It's like a lot of the excuse me, a lot of the foils we study, you know, when doing GPTs, deviate from quantum theory by virtue of their state spaces, you know, being polytopes or not smooth. And so for those kinds of theories like box world or, you know, mitoid theory, things like that, you know, you don't expect to be able to have reversible transformations because, you know, you only have these discrete symmetries of your state space. And if I move to something like, I don't know, a cylindrical state space, I would have some reversible transformations. So I could have sort of generators for, you know, maybe, you know, rotations around the cylinder, but I wouldn't be able to kind of flip, do a reflection. And so I wouldn't satisfy your strong symmetry assumption. So it feels a little bit like your strong symmetry plus the other assumption might be powerful enough to get you already very close to quantum theory. So I wonder, like, are the theories of like hyperspheres
or not?
My guess would be something maybe like a hypersphere of higher dimension than the block sphere might be something that satisfies your assumptions. My question is, have you thought about this?
Yeah, so thank you very much. So yes, me and Julio thought about this, and to this it actually referred the first point now in the future works, in the future direction, because it's because I think is a very important point to understand. So for what regards, for example, polytopes, I mean, at least if we want not to recover, even in principle, a generator of observable duality, we are using strong self-duality. So already we are already excluding a big part of the polytopes theory, as well, for example, the PR boxes. And I don't think we can give up to self-duality. For what concerns strong symmetry, it's strong, and maybe it's too strong, and we could avoid it because almost all the proof they just use transitivity, self-duality, and self-linear duality and diagonalization. So the idea that the last point again in the remarks was of using adopting the framework of, for example, sharp theories with purification that do not coincide with quantum theory. In general, I think that for example, in every Jordan algebra, they probably this assumption they probably hold. So I think the main exclusion of the known theory are just all the polygon theory, in general the theory with not a continuous symmetric state space.
Okay, good. Can I ask another question, Jacopo?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, the real vector space in which I describe a GPT can always be conceptualized as the real vector space of Hermitian operators, where the inner product is just the Hilbert-Schmidt inner product.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I want, I can always use the, you know, the Hilbert space formalism to talk about any GPT, even if it's post-quantum. Like, you know, mm-hmm. if I wanted to, I could do box world, where every state was a Hermitian operator and every effect was a Hermitian operator, because that's just another way of representing those real vectors.
Yes, sure.
So it seems to me if you did do that, you could ask, to what extent is the way that we normally represent dynamics in quantum theory reproduced, right? To what extent can I think of dynamics as being generated by the adjoint representation of some unitary, which is just the exponentiation of some Hermitian operator, which is the Hamiltonian. So I'm kind of curious whether you would get the same notion of reversible dynamics that you described here if you just embedded the GPT real vector space and thought of it as the space for Hermitian operators.
I don't know. Maybe we should try to do it and see what we can get from that.
Okay, thanks.
Can I ask a few questions?
Yeah, there are no other questions online, so yes.
Jacopo, I wanted to ask a few questions.
Yeah, there are no other questions online.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were, you can hear me. So just first of all, just something I didn't understand. So in the quantum collision model, you take the nth root you have S over N, the swap operation over N. That means the nth root, does it, of the swap operation? Is that right?
So yeah, so this T over N, you mean?
Is sort of the nth root.
Yes, I mean, this is the Parsons swap for cos T over N identity minus I sin of T over N swap on the left, and it's joint on the right.
And then in the GPT case, how do you do that?
So in the GPT, this actually is a good point. I could have spent a few words more. In the GPT, is just a special orthogonal matrix e to the g sigma t, because g sigma is a skew symmetric, t is just a real parameter. So this is a special orthogonal matrix. This is multiplied by a real vector. So just a matrix multiplication.
Okay.
So thank you for the question. It's actually a very, very good point.
And then sort of a more conceptual question. So I always imagine that if you have unitary evolution, then you don't necessarily have any ancillas or you're not interacting necessarily with any of the systems. But then your slide you had right at the very beginning, where you have this particle going through a boson field, suggests maybe you have a different point of view. So does this kind of work suggest that any non-trivial unitary is a consequence of some sort of interaction with a bunch of ancillas? Is that a sort of picture you have?
So the picture we had in the beginning was just a sort of intuition and motivation for us to start defining the dynamics from the collision model. So you can say more as a guiding principle than a real physical law. Then what is actually well mathematically formalized is how a collision model can be built in a GPT framework, and also the informational equilibrium assumptions that just says that when we have a collision model, if the target system and the ancillary system are in the same state, then we have the trivial dynamics. Does this answer to the question?
I think I was just asking a more philosophical question. So I mean, here's another way of thinking about it. So often in quantum theory, we have these classical fields that we help ourselves to, and they perhaps are parameters in a Hamiltonian.
Mm-hmm.
Strictly speaking, everything should be treated in a quantum fashion, and so those classical parameters in a Hamiltonian really should be. You should really have a bigger system where you treat those classical parameters in a quantum way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if the sort of approach you've taken offers a kind of GPT insight into that issue.
Yes, I mean, I think is a kind of a similar approach. What we have here is just as a field, we can picture the field just as a sequence of interaction between other ancillary systems of the GPT.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Jacopo, I have another question.
Yes, go on.
Okay, so one well-known theory in which most of the assumptions that you've made hold, but I guess not all of them, because there isn't usually taken to be a
a sort of isomorphism between observables and generators of evolution is real quantum theory. Could you talk a little bit about how this whole story plays out in that case?
Yes. So for real quantum theory, so for real quantum theory, then maybe the problem could actually be the informational equilibrium assumptions.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So one question from, so one important thing is that in these collisional models, each collision is reversible in a sense, no?
So, I mean, if you, so this is the basic unit of the collision, right?
Yeah.
And it by itself is not reversible because the collision itself is reversible, but then we trace out the ancillary system.
Okay. And this cannot be interpreted as a like a projection into another manifold or something.
I'm not sure about that, but by itself is not reversible. The point is that when we then consider the limit, so I initiate the sequence of that, what is left in what is saved by this limit for n goes to infinity. From every interaction is just the first order of the approximation of the Taylor expansion.
Okay.
And at the first order, they are all reversible. So this is the reason why in the limit, this sequence of non-reversible transformation is actually reversible. Because at the limit, there's a cutoff on all the terms above the first, where up to the first is reversible.
Okay. Ah, because I was
once you have done the expansion, it's very easy to see. You can find it in the paper in the appendix in the part okay. that proves actually the universality of the quantum collision model, and it's a couple of lines of calculation, but from that it's very clear.
Okay, because I was trying to understand this as a sort of a iterative learning process.
Okay.
Imagining like you have two different, I don't know, plane. Imagine two different hyperplanes.
Yeah.
And learning is a projection from one hyperplane to the other. Okay. And you have sort of a bouncing projection up and down between the hyperplane. Mm-hmm. And going with this limit, T over N, I was sort of parallelizing these two things almost. So the projection becomes almost reverse. I don't know. I was imagining if you can interpret this as a sort of learning process instead of a collision process.
I mean, I guess in some way you can, because so for the quantum case, what you consider is the swap, no?
Yeah.
And also from the swaps comes our intuition of the informational equilibrium assumption, yes, because exactly. The swap for the same state doesn't do anything. So the swap is actually a little bit of learning, no? Because when you apply the partial swap, mm-hmm. With some small probability, you're actually exchanging your system with the ancillary system. So in some way, you could say that you learn a little bit from the environment.
Yeah, exactly. So just to
in this sense, yes, it does.
Okay. I will just because to not have an idea of physical collision in my mind.
For the quantum case, I think the having in mind the partial swap really helps, because eventually just like exchanging a little bit, and for every collision is just exchanging a little bit, swapping a little bit with the environment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the question.
So, if there are no further questions here, and I don't see any further question, we might say thanks to Lorenzo also, because I guess in Hong Kong it's quite late now in the night.
Yeah, it's 10 p.m.
Good. So thank you for this present to us.
Yeah, thank you for my remarks for the invitation again. It's been very nice.